Hi everyone, welcome again to the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast. Got quite a number of news features to talk about this week. There's a lot of stuff coming out of the ICC. And we'll also have an extended discussion of corruption in cricket, particularly match fixing, as well as a couple of previews. And to join me for those is my regular co-host, Andrew Dixon. Andrew.
Hi Ross, hi everybody.
Andrew, the first and in some ways biggest news to come out was that we managed to nail the ICC down for what the breakdown of the qualifiers for the World 2020 qualifier will be. We did speculate that it would be the top six plus Scotland, and then the remaining six places would going to have to be distributed fairly tightly. It appears that there'll be two from the Americas, two from Africa, and one each from Asia, Europe, and East Asia Pacific.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, Asia has essentially gained a place, whilst Europe, Africa, and the Americas have all lost a place. Obviously, the tournament has now been cut to just 14 teams. I suppose it's disappointing from one point of view. Yeah, so we've got to make it harder for some teams to perhaps qualify. The sort of Americas, where you previously had Canada got automatic entry into the previous two tournaments, and then USA and Bermuda were the sort of obvious picks for the next qualifying, for the two qualifying spots. Now they're fighting it out. Canada, Bermuda, USA are going to be fighting it out for two qualifying spots, so one of them teams is going to miss out. In Europe, where you'd have Denmark and Italy and the two Channel Island sides sort of pushing for two places are now going to be playing for one place. And in Africa, where you had Namibia get automatic entry last time, and Kenya the time before that, and then Uganda and Namibia or Kenya fighting it out for two spots that we were sure to get, and now we're only going to have one less spot to go for. So it's perhaps going to make the regional qualifiers a bit more competitive.
I think at some level they didn't have a lot of choice on this, because the four Asian teams qualified through the top six, they almost had to give an extra place to Asia. And the AP couldn't have lost one, and it pretty much left it to where it has now been put.
Yeah, you look at the results of the last qualifier, and the bottom two teams were USA and Denmark, which would suggest losing Europe and the Americas losing a place. Of course, if you expand it to the bottom three, then America's actually have two teams in the bottom three because Bermuda finished 14th. So you could argue that maybe America should have been cut to just one team and you give an extra place to another region. But obviously the ICC decided not to do that, and they've taken three and then not decided to take two from the Americas, even though they had two teams in the bottom three of the last tournament.
It does raise an interesting point. Last year I asked Tim Anderson via Twitter when he was on the commentary team that the ICC had, whether or not there was a problem the Americas and Africa had their recent performances had lagged, and whether they were concerned about that. It appears, given both have now lost a place and it's going to be much harder for them to qualify, that the ICC's position on it is that if they don't improve, then they just won't have the opportunity to go to global tournaments.
Yeah, you look at that World 2020 qualifier and look at the bottom seven teams, there's three African sides and three America sides in there, and then one European side. So there's obviously a distinct drop in performance in those two regions, and I'm not entirely sure reducing the number of teams in tournaments is going to help improve that performance. But as we said, if it does make the qualifiers more competitive, maybe it will actually improve the standards of those teams, because they'll have more to play for regionally.
On a similar note, the ICC has put out the teams for the qualifiers for WCL 2 and 3. That 3 will be at the end of this year, and WCL 2 next year sometime. It would appear that given that two teams from WCL 2 will go through the iCup and World Cricket League Championship that will start in 2015, but all is not lost for particularly the Netherlands, that they might be able to find their way back into those tournaments?
Yeah, and especially as you think that, looking at the teams in WCL 2, the Netherlands are probably a possibility to host the tournament. Obviously, the you know the host of tournaments always tends to do well in World Cricket League events. It's quite interesting that they announced that it serves as a qualifier for the Intercontinental Cup, because when I actually reported that on Cricket Europe a couple of months ago, the ICC emailed me to say that that wasn't true and it hadn't been decided. Obviously, I was obviously my source was actually correct, and the ICC person who contacted me was not correct. The same source also told me that Nepal were going to be hosting Division 3, although that's still to be confirmed. They are, I suppose, the obvious host for that Division 3 tournament.
Yeah, I guess it also means that this WCL 4 that's coming up is still also quite a bit to play for, because it's not impossible that you could get a couple of promotions and find yourself into those major tournaments.
Yeah, you know, the World Cup in 2019 is still theoretically at least in reach for the teams taking part in WCL 4, and as is the Intercontinental Cup. And you know, if a team can pull off a couple of back-to-back promotions and then have a you know a good World Cricket League Division 2 tournament, they could well find themselves playing first-class cricket, which could allegedly lead to getting matches against test-playing nations. Or so the ICC claim.
In less good news, coming out of Asia, the recent meeting of the Asian Cricket Council has indicated that potentially there will be a reduction in the ICC development funds and possibly even the canning of the Asia Cup, which was what the ICC used to do a lot of its development work. All of its funding came out of being able to sell the TV rights to the tournament. So there's a bit of a possibility that Asian Cricket Council's going to have to wind back its development. And obviously, because they're the only region that's still doing a lot of these major tournaments, 50 over tournaments, that might also come to threat.
Yeah, I'm aware that there has been some talk within development circles within the ICC that the Asian Cricket Council are a bit of a rogue body, as much as you can be a rogue body within international cricket, because they don't do things the same as the other regions. The decision to switch to 2020 tournaments came from IC Development, and they're not too pleased that Asian Cricket Council hasn't done that. The Asian Cricket Council is the only region now that doesn't use Cricket HQ as their tournament software management system. You know, there's a lot of niggle among certain ICC development officials that the Asian Cricket Council don't play ball with the rest of the development programme, and perhaps they're going to use this as an excuse to try and bring them into line, so to speak.
And on a similar note, in some ways, Nepal and Afghanistan have both requested from the BCCI access to facilities and the ability to send some touring teams, and apparently it's been 6 months they haven't had a response, which is fairly disappointing.
Yeah, extremely disappointing. There's a bit of background on this. When England A, or the England Lions as they call themselves, sent a team to India and were using facilities there, the BCCI sort of felt that their regional organisation shouldn't be providing England with facilities without consulting them, and they've been a bit wary about letting other countries use their facilities for training in the past. In the Crick Info article on this, there's a very interesting line where the writer says, "It is believed that a few high-ranking BCCI officials are averse to the idea of letting the game grow beyond the full members." I think there's no surprises to hear that.
No, not at all. I wouldn't necessarily limit it to BCCI officials either. Wouldn't be a podcast without news from the Osaka, Andrew. And we discussed their national tournament a couple of episodes ago. A little bit of a timeline for what happened in the last few days. On May the 28th, they appointed Sunil Kumar as the tournament manager for the Nationals, which are to be played at the end of August. on May the 30th, they had their contract terminated by the Indianapolis' mayor's office because, amongst other things, they hadn't been communicating with them, and the Indianapolis government felt that the tournament was not well placed to go ahead.
Yeah, I think we discussed on the last episode, or the guy said I was highly sceptical that the event would even take place, and indeed it isn't going to take place. And yeah, I think Darren Beasley leaving has been the sort of final straw, and then with him leaving and then the USAC are not communicating with the Indianapolis government has led to this happening. And yeah, it's pretty... another pretty disastrous thing for USACA.
Yeah, the time frame of the appointment tells me that they probably got wind of the idea that they're going to lose the contract and then decided to do something. And this, I mean, to me, to draw an analogy, it's like the way students interact with faculty members who don't bother to turn up to class and then turn up at the last second before the end of the semester saying, what can I do, what can I do to actually pass. The contract had a 60-day dismissal period, which dates from May 30th, which puts it right up against the starting point of the tournament. So Indianapolis has given them right up until the point where they could cancel the contract and then therefore not actually have the tournament run to get themselves in order. And as far as we can tell, they've appointed a tournament manager 2 days before that was to go ahead, and before that had basically done nothing. And
yeah,
this is... it just seems so typical of USACA. It's one thing to play politics and have a lot of those types of things going on in your administration. It's another thing to basically fail to run the organisation in any way, shape or form, and to just disenfranchise everybody who interacts with you in any way. And this is pretty much what USACA's been doing for a long period now. But, I mean, again, this is so typical of this organisation. It's just, you have to wonder how much longer they can continue to do this, because it's just disgraceful.
Yeah, I think I said on Twitter yesterday that they could find themselves celebrating their 50th anniversary as an ICC member next year with expulsion from the ICC. And you have to think, surely they can't go on much longer.
But they still aren't communicating. Well, not in any way that's meaningful. Peter Della Penna attempted to contact Gladstone Dainty and didn't get a particularly enthused response.
Yeah, Peter put this out on his social media accounts yesterday as we're recording this, and so he called Gladstone Dainty just to get a response to Indianapolis terminating this hosting agreement, and Gladstone Dainty said, basically, I don't think you should call me and ask me anything about cricket, because there is nothing impartial about you. What difference does it make? You have your little racist stuff that you carry on with, and I don't deal with bigots, so don't call my number. And this just strikes me as, you know, Gladstone Dainty has decided he's going to start playing the race card, he's going to start accusing people of racism, when in actual fact it's his own incompetence. You know, he's been involved with USACA for well over a decade, and that's a decade of complete incompetence, and just... they're clearly no longer fit for purpose.
No, Peter's a pretty good journalist, and he's the only one in the US, more or less, that's going to talk about it. He's obviously doing it on behalf of ESPN, who actually had an interest in that tournament as well. So,
yeah, they were even going to televise the tournament on ESPN3, their online channel. So, Gladstone Dainty isn't going to win himself any friends.
No, it's just inappropriate to do that with your media partner, and that's what Peter is. So, again, they keep digging a hole. It's just a question of how deep it gets before it stops digging, I guess.
The ICC Americas Women's Championship was first played in 2007 and has taken place four times since. In the current tournament cycle, however, there will be no tournament. In response, a group of players from the region have set up a petition to campaign for the reinstatement of the tournament. Joining me now to talk about it is Canadian international Duraya Shabir. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you, Andrew, for inviting us on this show and helping us spread the message.
Okay. when did you first hear that the tournament had been cancelled?
We started hearing rumours about it when we came back from our qualifiers in Ireland last July. But nothing was official. We just kept hearing that, you know, ICC is going to cancel it. And then I think in February, we started hearing from the other countries in our region that they had received some information from the board saying that it was finally cancelled.
So from other countries, so you didn't actually hear that from Cricket Canada?
No, Cricket Canada has till date not sent any communication out to any of the players, though they've told us unofficially, you know, when we've asked them as to what's happening with the training and things like that, and they're like, well, there's nothing coming up, so.
So how did the sort of idea for the petition come about?
This has been the only tournament in the region that you know, the cricketers here get to play and represent their countries, and the only, let's say, big match practice that they can really have before they can, you know, go to play a qualifier. And with that having been taken away, of course, we've all been feeling like our hopes and aspirations have been dashed to the ground. So we started talking to each other in the region, and it was a similar sentiment all across, and said, okay, let's come together and let's see what we can do and be a voice with the ICC. Because I don't know when and how and who represented us at the ICC while this decision was being made. I really want that person to step up and tell us what they said to the ICC about the growth of women's cricket in this region. Because this program has, just when we were starting to get up and get going and improve, you know, the reach of the program, they've again shot it down. So.
Yeah, but that's certainly something that seems to happen across the world, where that decision seems to be made without any reason being given for those decisions.
I think a few of the things that they've cited unofficially, again, because I don't have any communication from my board, is, you know, saying that the performance of the two teams that went to the qualifiers wasn't up to ICC's expectations, and they don't see the numbers increasing in this region. And actually, you know, I don't think that's true, because our standards have improved. And our numbers have grown. The number of women's teams across the Americas today is far more than there were a couple of years ago. So really, again, I don't know how what ICC based their decision on.
Obviously, there is scheduled to be a global Women's World 2020 qualifier next year. Do you know if there is going to be an Americas team in that tournament, and how will that be decided?
Well, no, there is going to be no Americas team in that tournament. It's been told to us that the spot of the Americas team is going to be given to another region, and we will not have a chance to go to the qualifiers or any team from this region.
You must be extremely disappointed at that there's not going to be any Americas representative at all.
Absolutely. It's very, very disappointing.
Do you know if there's any plans to organise any international matches for you outside of this tournament? Or the Argentina, for example, played in the South American Championship last month. Are there any similar plans for either yourself or the US or Bermuda?
Well, there was some talk about them trying to organize something between Canada and the US, but really we don't have any details as of now, and it's hard to confirm whether it will happen. But again, I mean, that's not going to help the other countries. Like, just having a tournament between Canada and the U.S. is not going to help with, you know, the spirit of the Argentinians and the Chileans and everyone else who's taken up a sport that is so new to their region, right? So,
just what about women's cricket in general in Canada? Are there separate leagues for women's cricket, and across the country? They're just based in, say, Toronto or Vancouver, the big cities.
Currently, we have a women's league in Toronto, and there are teams in Victoria. That's Vancouver, and there are grassroots teams coming up in the east, in New Brunswick, in Calgary, in Alberta. So the growth is happening. But yes, the majority of the cricket is being played in Ontario. And we have about four teams, and the girls also play in the men's league here in Ontario. So,
Do you think that perhaps Cricket Canada have concentrated so much on men's cricket, with the men having, you know, World Cups and so on to play in, and they've sort of let women's cricket has become a bit of an afterthought?
Women's cricket has always been an afterthought. We've never been given the support from our board that we need to grow this game. If anything, it's been just the spirit of the girls in this region to go out and play. I can just tell you about our preparation for the tournament in Ireland, the qualifier that we went to. We had a year to prepare for that, and all we got was like 2 hours of training every week. You can imagine, if that was the kind of support that our board was going to give us, you can see that their intention clearly wasn't there for this team to go and perform in any decent manner, right? So it's always been a struggle for the women to have a voice with Cricket Canada. We've tried approaching them several times, but it's just the door's been shut on our face. So,
and just sort of looking back at the results from that tournament in Ireland last year, Canada beat Japan in the tournament, and Japan are regarded as one of the top associate women's teams. So it seems a little strange that they'd say that the performance wasn't up to standard.
That's exactly my point. Is like we had absolutely no match practice going into that tournament. We hadn't even got together as a team. We actually came together as a team only after landing on Irish soil. And as you know, our first couple of matches were disastrous because we still hadn't even found the team that we wanted to play with. And as we progressed through the tournament, our performance started improving, and we won with Japan, and we had a very close game with Thailand. So it's really, we've done an infographic as such to just show how our performance did start improving once we got, the exposure we needed and the match practice that we needed, competition practice, basically.
We know from our traffic statistics that we have some listeners in Dubai who may potentially work for the ICC. If anybody from the ICC is listening, what would you say to them?
I would say that, this decision is a retrograde step in growing this game in this region. You really need to bring it back because our boards are not doing enough to promote the game. If ICC walks away from it as well, then what are the women? What do the women have to look forward to? This is an amateur sport. You play for honor, you play to represent your country. And if you take that away, what do you tell the kids? One day you can play for Canada, you can play for US. No, you can't even sell them that dream now anymore.
And I suppose with the sort of relatively smaller player pool, getting to the national side quickly is a big selling point when you're trying to spread the game amongst young Canadian girls.
Absolutely. That's what we tell them. When you look at in Canada, when you look at other sports like ice hockey or basketball, that or even soccer, that's what kids now gravitate towards in school. But now, and it's a struggle for them to be able to, wear a Canadian cap in these sports because the competition is just too big. So to be able to sell them cricket and tell them, hey, you can wear the Canadian colors, in a few years' time, that's just awesome.
And that's all been taken away from them, I suppose.
It's all been taken away, yeah. And also, here's the thing. I just wanted to... I know they've been citing the performance of the Canadian and the US women's team, but if you look at what the men did at their qualifiers, they didn't do any better either. They ended up at the very bottom of their pool, and this is a team that once used to participate in the World Cup, the Canadian team, right? So... they didn't take the Americas away from the men, but they decided that somehow the women were not deserving of it.
Okay, anything else you'd like to say to our listeners?
Nothing. I would just say that please, if all of you can support us in our efforts to bring this tournament back to the Americas, and we'd really appreciate that. And I'd like to thank you, Andrew, for helping us spread this message. Yes.
Oh, it's no problem. I'd certainly urge all our listeners to go to www.womenscricketnow.com and sign the petition. I think, as we're recording now, I think it's got about 65 signatures, and it needs a lot more. And hopefully, we'll get them. So, thanks for taking the time to speak to us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Andrew, the big issue in cricket the last few weeks, unless you've been following the IPL, is, and to some extent, even if you have been following the IPL, is corruption and match fixing. There's been a number of news articles coming out because of first a leak report, and then Lou Vincent throwing everyone under the bus as a result. Listeners of this podcast may think that that's something that happens only amongst the full members, and that Associate Affiliate Cricket is free of match fixing. I'm not of that opinion. Not to say that there's been any matches that I have a specific concern with, but as far as I can tell, if Associate Cricket hasn't had any problems with major fixing, it's mostly from pure luck and not from any level of vigilance within it, because it's extremely vulnerable to having that kind of match fixing.
Yeah, I've certainly heard the occasional rumour about something slightly suspicious going on, but obviously never anything that I could confirm, and obviously you have to be very careful about accusing people of this sort of thing, so I think it can get you into serious trouble if you wrongly accuse someone of this. And yeah, so there have been rumours, and you know, it would be very naive to think that it isn't going on. And as you say, it's complete luck if it hasn't, because the level of vigilance around these tournaments is quite low. I've been in pre-tournament meetings in European tournaments where, you know, the captains and managers of the teams have been there, and there's been absolutely no mention about, you know, the dangers of suspicious approaches, and what to do if there is an approach, but you know, who to contact at the ICC. Should you contact the tournament director? Should you go straight to your anti-corruption securities unit within the ICC? There's absolutely none of that. So there's the checking process at these tournaments isn't perhaps as thorough as it is higher up the chain.
Yeah, that's right. And if we've got problems higher up the chain, then you have to worry about what's going on lower down. And I guess it's worthwhile going through what we know about match fixing, both within cricket and also football, where it's absolutely rife, because I think it highlights just how vulnerable Associate Cricket is to match fixing. You should also, it barely is worth mentioning why it's important, but it's not just about the integrity of the sport. Corrupt matches have known to lead to a collapse of interest in the sport in places where leagues have actually got so corrupt that they've actually collapsed. That happened in China in the football. Associate Cricket certainly can't afford to have the integrity of its matches cast into question and of its cricketers, because there isn't enough support to lose any.
And you know, you always get the feeling that the ICC are looking for just one excuse to cut the development program off entirely, and if there's corruption involved, and that will be their excuse.
Another important reason is that corruption begets other types of corruption, and match fixing will attract criminal syndicates who want to control betting and the sport and use it to launder money. So extremely dangerous for the players involved and the players that are surrounding it and the officials that are surrounding it if it does become part of the thing. It's not just rogue players betting on matches and we have to concern ourselves with. It is, in fact, as a recent report from the ICCS put out, it is part of this major criminal syndicate issues that are in the black market betting, and even in some cases apparently terrorism, that is attracted to betting and to sport as a way of, as I said, laundering money, and that's not something we want to have around the game.
No, and it can become very dangerous for the players who get involved. You know, they might think they're involved at a very minor level, but if something goes wrong, then the people leading these gangs aren't the sort of people who will just say, oh, well, never mind. They're the sort of people who will come round to your house with a gun and threaten yourself and your family. And you know, it's extremely dangerous for the players.
Let's start with why fixing's not as likely in Associate Cricket. One is that, for the most part, most matches at that level actually have quite a lot of meaning. World Cup and T20 qualifiers are very important to the players and the organisations, because most matches actually count for something, and most World Cricket League games generally count for something, either promotion or relegation, except probably that final day, which is a worry. But it's not true of all matches that they count.
No, and you can also have a situation where your one team maybe is already assured of being relegated, but the team that they're playing, you know, their position in the tournament isn't sure. Maybe if they get a big win on that last day of the round robin stage, maybe they can get promoted or get through to the next stage of the qualifiers. And so those matches are perhaps at risk as well. And we're talking about it's almost a different type of corruption there. But teams agreeing to underperform to help an opponent. But that sort of opens the door for more worrying forms of corruption, shall we say.
Yeah, and it also should be said that hasn't been a sufficient deterrent in football either. There are a number of high-profile, meaningful games in Champions League, in World Cup matches that have apparently been fixed. So if you're going to match-fix a World Cup football match, which is a very, very big and very important tournament, then World Cricket League's pretty small fry in terms of importance.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The other possible reason why it's not been fixed is that most associate games are very low profile, though, which matters for betting markets because the betting markets need a certain amount of money running through them in order to actually cover the fixing bets. And they do have relatively unreliable live scores, if you're betting on live scores, which means, ironically, the ICC's incompetence at keeping people abreast of tournaments is possibly helping to keep match fixing at bay.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. And even when the live scores are there, they're not always accurate. The bookmaker might person betting might put money on the next the next ball hit being a six or whatever, and then it does say that it's a six, but actually it was only a dot ball to the slip fielder or whatever, or the batsman was actually out, or, which I have seen on ICC live scores before. So so you can't really have a reliable betting market on the live scores, at least.
But having said that, fixing in major betting is absolutely rife in low-profile football leagues. There was a report that Billericay Town, who were in the 6th division of English football, had more money put on their match than had actually been put on a Barcelona game. Australia has also had a recent match-fixing scandal in its state leagues, which is not a big league. It's completely semi-professional or amateur. And so it is the case that these smaller leagues are being approached by match fixers as a way of putting bets on. So it doesn't really matter that the associate cricket's low profile. It is actually people will bet on anything and have done, especially in the illegal betting market.
And when your players are either unpaid or paid quite poorly, it's quite easy to be able to approach someone and offer them some money to underperform.
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition to those, officials are also mostly or entirely unpaid within these countries, and officialdom is one of the places in which match fixing is easiest to switch. Bribing an umpire at this level is relatively straightforward. Not straightforward in the sense that they can do it, but straightforward in the sense that you could approach them and they're not being paid terribly large amount. And now, as we said already, it's incredibly easy to approach both players and officials. And officials also includes administration of all these countries at tournaments. It's almost open access if you go to one of those matches.
Yeah, you know, the players will have their lunch. Players and officials will have their lunch in the public bar at the cricket club. And anybody can walk in and start talking to players, to umpires, to tournament officials, the tournament referee, the tournament umpire manager, the tournament director, and so on and so forth. And yeah, it's to some extent that's good. It's quite nice that you can almost develop a relationship with players and officials at associate tournaments. But it does lead the door open to some rather unsavoury characters also approaching the players and umpires.
And as we're trying to emphasise, this is definitely a risk. The other point we should make about low-profile games is there has been betting on associate matches, even with the legitimate betting agencies, including the recent Asian Premier League.
Yeah, and recently in Ireland, Paddy Power, a big bookmaker in the UK and Ireland, has started offering betting on Irish club cricket. So it's not even just the internationals in associate countries that are attracting gambling. It's the actual domestic games there as well.
To move on more towards fixing is likely, I guess the starting point should be to say that it has actually happened already as well. Marissa Dumbo was suspended in 2004, and there have been recent rumours surrounding Kenyan cricket as well.
Kenyan matches in the last World Cup were allegedly fixed, although Kenya would probably have lost them anyway.
may not have lost them by as much.
Yeah. And I think there was rumours that a former Kenyan captain was involved with a Zimbabwean bookie in 2010. Obviously, Maurice Odumbe is a former Kenyan captain, but he wasn't really involved with Kenyan cricket in 2010. So we don't really know who that former Kenyan captain was, and it would be wrong of us to speculate. But yeah, there's definitely be fixing that has happened in the past, and as I said earlier, there are occasionally rumours.
And it doesn't help the rumours that the centre of world match fixing is basically Singapore and Malaysia, and of the last 9 World Cricket League tournaments, 5 of these, including the one that's coming up in June, 5 have been in those 2 nations, as well as numerous Asian Cricket Council tournaments. And probably the next biggest problem for betting has been UAE, which was the centre for match fixing during the Sharjah years. So associate cricket is constantly surrounded by the place and being played in the places that are the most central to match fixing.
Yeah, those countries do have some of the best facilities, but there is the it's a risk factor of playing there that you potentially become surrounded by, as I say, those unsavoury characters, and corruption becomes a big risk.
And as we've already mentioned, it's relatively easy to find the players, and it's not. There doesn't seem to be a lot of vigilance going on at those tournaments for whether there might be fixing going on. There's no officials talking to the players. So, I was in Malaysia a few months ago for World Cricket League Division 5. If there'd been fixing going on, it wouldn't have been difficult for it to happen, because there certainly wasn't anything to prevent the approaches being made.
It's quite a common thing now it's certainly required in international cricket, and it's becoming required in domestic cricket as well, that players aren't allowed mobile phones and during the matches. But you have been at European tournaments when players have been, the batsman's got out and he gets on the phone to his family and starts talking about how bad the decision was and whatnot. So your players have access to communication devices. You see them, you're using laptops, going on the internet while they're not out on the field. And yeah, there's the rigorousness of the investigation is sorely lacking at some of these tournaments.
It probably also doesn't help, although it's good for associate cricket, that associate players have been playing in these leagues that have possibly had corruption going on. The English Premier League, which has now collapsed, and the Sri Lankan Premier League, which has also collapsed, were both involved associate players, and both have kind of rumours swirling around them.
Yeah, as does the Indian Cricket League, which had a couple of associate players involved with it, a long forgotten tournament. And there was a whole scandal regarding a number of English players in the Bangladesh Premier League last year. That may have been corrupt, and it's a bit worrying that, it's one of those things that's, it's a good thing that associate players are being invited to play in these tournaments, but again, there's the risk of corruption, like with a lot of this that we've been talking about.
one other point to make about those tournaments too is that one of the key points that came out of these reports is that being able to guarantee that you are actually going to be paid is one of the most important professional cricketers, and that match fixers will pay you because they have the money and they have the reliability of being part of the criminal network and need those tournaments to be as reliable and making payments as potential alternatives. And the final issue is that, particularly in FIFA, where the most football federations are in quite poor countries, that it and a lot of clubs are struggling if you move away from the big few leagues, that they're generally quite willing to take money, the officialdom, willing to do things like take a tour to a country to play a friendly with fixed officials, even if they don't know that the officials are fixed, because they get offered a certain amount of money to do it. And it's certainly, that's the case in most ICC members as well. If they were offered a certain amount of money to go on tour somewhere, they would do so. And the fact that the ICC actually now has a large number of tournaments that are being played outside of their control and without their appointed officials is also a bit of a worry.
Yeah, and again, it's one of the things that it's good that these tournaments are taking place. You know, we talked about the South American Championships on a previous episode. I saw something this morning that the Central American Championships are going to come back next year. There's a tournament in Europe coming up, that's run outside of the purview of ICC Europe. It's a matter of concern. There was talk in ICC Europe that they would provide limited support to some of these independent tournaments. They'd provide a set of balls to use in the tournament. They'd provide a couple of umpires from the ICC Europe panel and so on and so forth. But that doesn't seem to be happening. There doesn't seem to be any support now coming for these tournaments. And it's extremely worrying, especially as you're not necessarily picking the players who are the best players in the country. You're picking the players who can afford to go on the tour. They might have to pay their own travel costs, for example. And if someone has to pay to go on a tour, then, there's the potential that, someone might say, I'll pay your travel costs. I'll give you a few extra $100 as well. And, you just make sure, you get out for low scores in every match. And it's one of them things that makes people potentially more at risk of being corrupted.
A final point on match fixing, Andrew, is it's obviously very difficult to find evidence. We've found that the ACSU has struggled. People have proposed polygraph tests as a solution. You're not entirely convinced?
No, the MCC's World Cricket Committee has proposed this in the past. Steve Waugh even took a polygraph test in public to show that he wasn't corrupt. But I don't think there's any suspicion of him being corrupt. And Brian Murgatroyd, who commentates a lot on international cricket, also mentioned it in an article. It's something that's often a bugbear of mine. Polygraph tests claim to be 80% accurate. Actual scientific studies of polygraph tests have suggested those claims are rather overblown and that the actual accuracy of polygraph tests isn't that much better than chance. To some extent, you may as well just toss a coin to decide whether someone's telling the truth or lying. But even if we accept the claims of 80% accuracy, we need to look at what that actually means. So there's actually a very low probability initially of players being corrupt in the first place, thankfully, we hope. People interpret that 80% as essentially being the chance that a player is corrupt if they fail the polygraph tests. And it isn't that. It's actually the chance that they'll fail the polygraph tests if they are corrupt, which are two subtly different, very subtly different things. Just to give an example here, if you take a random sample of 1,000 cricketers and assume that 1% of them are corrupt, so 10 are corrupt, if you then give all those 1,000 cricketers a polygraph test, which apparently is 80% accurate, you would have, of the 10 corrupt cricketers, eight of them would be shown to be corrupt by the polygraph test. But of the 990 who aren't corrupt, 20%, so 198, would be shown to also to be corrupt, even though they are not corrupt. So the polygraph test would actually report back that 206 players were corrupt, when actually it's only 10. And we know for certain that 8 of them are corrupt, 8 of those 206 are corrupt. So the actual probability that someone who has failed the polygraph test is corrupt is actually only 4% in this case, and that's hardly adequate to establish guilt.
And that's assuming, of course, that it's a 90% correct rate, which, as you said, it's probably not, and it starts to get even worse when...
Yeah, there is a very good reason why polygraph tests aren't accepted as evidence in court in most jurisdictions around the world. It's because the claims of 80% accuracy are somewhat suspect.
The conclusion of all that, Andrew, is that without saying that there's corruption going on, there are two things that I would say. That one is that it doesn't actually seem to be much evidence the ICC thinks it's a priority at this level, which is extremely worrying because the biggest issue in football is at this level, is at those lower levels, not in the major leagues, because there's more money in those and they're harder to corrupt the players when they're well paid and properly paid. And also that if attention is not paid and if social cricket continues to advance in terms of its media, a scandal is probably almost inevitable at some point.
Yeah, sadly, would have to agree with that. And as I said earlier, you know, the ICC seem to be looking for an excuse to cut the development program loose, and a scandal would be just the excuse they need. And some more rigor is certainly needed.
Let's move on to previews of some upcoming tournaments, Andrew. The next tournament coming up is from the 5th to the 8th of June. It's a pan-European cricket tournament being organised in Hungary. It's going to involve Hungary, Austria, Malta, Poland, as well as a Hungary A side and a combined team. Good again to see this type of tournament being played.
As we were just saying, potentially these tournaments are perhaps more open to corruption, but yeah, especially you've got some sides that aren't involved in ICC Europe tournaments, Hungary, Malta and Poland. Obviously, Austria will be playing in ICC Europe Division 2 towards the end of June, so they're using this as preparation. And Hungary, Malta and Poland looking to perhaps convince ICC Europe that they are capable of playing in tournaments.
Yeah, it's certainly important that they can show that. I guess we haven't actually heard from the ICC Europe what the criteria will be for inclusion in Division 3 next time round, but winning a self-organised tournament certainly wouldn't hurt.
No, you certainly hope not.
The other major tournament will be the ACC Trophy Elite tournament from the 7th to 13th of June in Singapore. It'll involve the hosts, as well as Kuwait, the Maldives, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and Bhutan. You'd have to assume Singapore would be kind of roaring favourites for this.
I think that's a fair assumption. Bahrain, perhaps the only team that could maybe challenge them. Bahrain have had a couple of good results in recent years. Only one team to get promoted, and I think betting on Singapore would be a very safe bet indeed. Obviously, Singapore, if you excuse the what we were just talking about in the previous segment. Singapore definitely favourites for this tournament, and I think it's safe to say that they're going to be promoted to the ACC Premier League.
Yeah, one note, it is quite odd that this tournament that actually follows the Premier League rather than being an entry point to the Premier League. It means that presumably Malaysia will be back in this tournament in 2 years and therefore will go a couple of years without that high-level cricket and possibly even won't be able to play in the T20 qualifiers, which they would have now been hoping to use to get into the global qualifier.
Yeah, especially as you'd probably back Malaysia to even actually come through those qualifiers and qualify, because they would be after those those top four Asian countries, Malaysia or there or thereabouts, in the, you know, being able to qualify for tournaments.
And I think that's all we've got. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Russ.